Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archives.
This is Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service. Marks on Mechanics. Jonathan Marks investigates objects mechanical. In this fourth episode, the focus is on the phonograph and gramophone.
Melodic clocks, bells, and pianolas. So far in this series, we've looked at mechanical ways of making music. But of course, there are now ways to reproduce music, replaying a live performance time after time. Just as there are hi-fi enthusiasts, so there are those interested in collecting low fidelity, the early machines that made today's recording industry possible. Fred Harnebeek works in the hi-fi and consumer electronics industry. But in 1977, when the celebrations were organised in Holland and around the world to commemorate 100 years of the phonograph, he read a beautiful history book by Leonard de Vries, which a few years later got him hooked.
In 1985, I bought my first phonograph. I thought, well, it's nice to have just one old phonograph to play some roles and have one just from the beginning in my living room. But 1 year later on some auction, I saw a very nice, very small phonograph. It was quite cheap, so I thought, well, let her buy it also. And then I had two, and from that time, I was a collector, of course.
Fred's now converted the top floor of his house into a small museum. But it's not just equipment that fascinates. It's the stories that go with them. It all begins in 1877 with the first phonograph and this first recording.
Mary had a little lamb, its feet were white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Yes, this is Edison's voice, and this recording was made on the first tinfoil phonograph in the night from 5 to 6 of December, 1877. It was made in his laboratory at Menlo Park in the States.
Well, that's just outside New York.
Yes, just outside New York. And what you just heard is a recording made on tinfoil.
Now, what have we got here? Because this is, in fact, not original, but it's a replica of Edison's first piece of recording equipment.
Yes, a very good friend of mine made it. He is also a collector. And he was obsessed by this first machine and rebuilt it himself. And it's really working.
Okay, let me try and describe it. It's a piece of wood, first of all. On top of that wood is a large drum, and on that drum is, first of all, a screw, which you can turn by a crank, so you can actually turn this around, and it takes the drum with it. And on top of the drum is a very thin sheet of tin foil.
Yes, now, and before you have a membrane with some speaker. You have to speak very loud into the membrane, and in the middle of the membrane you see a metal pin, and that pin will push against the tinfoil while you turn the drum. Right. And the membrane is vibrating by your voice, and the pin is pushing the waves of your voice in the tinfoil.
So you've got to speak very loudly.
Very loudly, yes.
Otherwise it doesn't make any indentation at all.
Indeed. But if you like, we can make a trial. If you know some nice song or poem, please not too long, because the whole recording time is not more than 15 seconds.
Okay, let's have a go. Right, you start turning.
Okay.
Roses are red, violets are blue. I'm the original, so what are you?
Right, we've made that recording, but, I mean, you know, the audio quality is pretty poor.
Yeah, and the playing time was very, very short.
15 seconds.
It was not practical. in the beginning, it was a novelty. It was just an attraction. 1 year after the invention, it was known in almost every country in the world. So they made all kinds of models, and it was spread all over the world by people who stand on year markets and so on, and fairs.
But curiously, Edison was so wrapped up in the development of the electric light bulb that his phonograph invention was neglected for more than 10 years after he first showed it in 1877.
In fact, Edison didn't like music at all.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, obviously this tin foil is not very practical. I mean, if you were a boss, you couldn't really sit here shouting letters into a small microphone.
For 15 seconds.
No.
That doesn't work. So there were other people who developed the phonograph. While Edison was busy with his electricity and his electric light, other people went on.
People like the inventor of the telephone, Alexander Graham Bell, together with the physicist Charles Tainter. In 1880, they went a step further than Edison. Instead of fragile tin foil, they decided to record sound on a cardboard cylinder covered with very hard wax.
In 1886, they had their new device ready. It worked very well, and they called it graphophone, and that's the reversed word of phonograph.
Which I'm sure pleased Edison very much.
Very much. He objected very much against that that development, and he said that somebody has stolen his invention. But strange enough, there was no lawsuit, because he needed the improvements, and he needed the wax cylinder. So they gave each other cross licenses, and now there were two companies developing the phonograph further.
So this was obviously the stimulus then to Edison to forget about light bulbs for a while and go back to the phonograph.
Okay, well, the electric light was there, so now he could concentrate again on the phonograph. And he did. He did very well, in fact. In June 1888, he introduced to the world the perfected phonograph with lots of photographs. He was sitting behind his new machine. He was very proud of it. And this new machine outperformed the graphophone in every respect. It worked with an electric motor and with cylinders of pure wax. So no carton carrier covered with wax, but pure wax cylinders. And the playing time was about 2 minutes. So you could now really use it as a recording machine. And another advantage of the pure wax cylinders was that you could just shave the recording off and use the cylinder again. So you could use the cylinder for more than 10 times.
But still the idea is this is an office machine. I mean, it's not for entertainment, it's for work.
Yes. Everybody was focused on using it as a dictating machine. And another barrier was that you couldn't buy it. You just could rent it. And the 33 agents in the USA didn't make much profit on the rental business.
So did that then stimulate them to think about, well, maybe we could use it for entertainment?
So they asked Edison to develop a device for recording music, and he still didn't want it. So the agents started in the USA small studios and started making music recordings by themselves. And they used it commercially, so they put a phonograph in a cafe, a bar, and then people just drop in a coin and then it played the music.
Early jukebox.
Yeah, it was one of the first jukeboxes, but then business really started.
And because the machine could talk, there was a promotional role too.
I am the Edison phonograph, created by the great wizard of the New World to delight those who would have melody or be amused. I can sing you tender songs of love. I can give you merry tales and joyous laughter. I can transport you to the realms of music. I can call you to join in the rhythmic dance. I can lull the babe to sweet repose or waken in the aged heart soft memories of youthful days. No matter what may be your mood, I am always ready to entertain you.
But duplication of the recordings was a problem as yet unresolved.
Well, in the first studios, you had about 5 machines with 5 horns just in front of the musician. And the guy just had to play every time for about 5 rolls. And some musicians were playing for weeks the same song.
Edison first tackled the problem by making a sort of transcription device, but then decided he should make a mould instead. but it was difficult to stop the hot wax sticking in the grooves of the mould, and the wax cylinder was very fragile.
Extremely fragile. If you dropped it, it was gone.
Right.
And also scratches and things like that, it was very fragile.
Now, obviously, then, they must have done something to improve the idea of just using pure wax.
Yes. There was another company, not the Edison company, who thought of another material, and that material was called celluloid. That very small company, it was around 1910, that company was called the Lambert Company, and they developed a roll with a carrier of cardboard covered with celluloid.
And was that a better sound?
The sound was better. The sound was louder, because the material was harder, and it didn't wear. And you could drop it on the floor, and it didn't break. So they made an advertisement and called their rolls indestructible. And the public was not speaking anymore about music rolls, but about indestructibles.
So let's hear one, actually played on a machine that's older than the roll. The machine is from 1897, and the roll from 1910. Edison established dealers in Europe, especially Britain and France, but naturally other companies wanted to cash in too.
In fact, in France, there was some guy, Charles Pathé was his name, and he bought one phonograph from Edison, studied it very well, and built just copies of it. But then he got, of course, in trouble, and, after some processes, he had to pay some license and made an agreement with Edison to build his own machines. And first, they were just simple copies of it, working not so very well as the Edison versions. But after 1900, he came out with original models, and they played very well. And in fact, I have here a model from 1903, and it's very simple, and the motor is making a very loud noise, but the sound is very musical. It's not so hard sound, and I can demonstrate, if you want, the same roll. Maybe the microphone can give the difference of sound.
Okay, so we take the same roll that you played a few minutes ago and put it onto the...
This is a very, very small machine.
Right.
It was also very cheap. And but if you see, the horn is made of aluminum, and the reproducer is much bigger. It's not a needle. It's kind of sapphire, a small sapphire, and it's just carried by the grooves. And the Edison machine has a mechanical device which brings the reproducer just along the roll.
So it tracks it?
Yeah, it tracks it.
Whereas this thing just sort of rests on it, as it were.
It just rests on it.
Let's hear it.
Okay, I wind it up first.
What's this one next to it? I mean, that's French, but this is what, German?
It's a very small German machine of the Excelsior Werke, and it's beautifully made. It's more made like an Edison machine, also with the movement of the reproducer along the roll, and the motor is very silent, but the sound is lousy. The sound is thin.
So they got the mechanics right, but the audio quality
is
useless.
Yes, the audio quality, the reproducer, in fact, is too small in the horn also.
Thank you. Now, what's this machine next to it here? Because, again, it's a phonograph, but the roll that you put on it looks very different.
Yeah, the roll is blue, and it's a so-called blue amber roll. And Edison, in fact, started a new technique in 1908 and introduced the four-minute roll instead of the two-minute. And he came to that technique by making the groove smaller and changing the speed. But if you make the groove smaller, you also have to make adjustments to the transport. Because you saw also with the other phonographs that the reproducer is led across the roll. So what Edison did in 1908, he introduced a so-called attachment. And on all machines, also the oldest ones, you could buy for just a little amount a kind of a gearbox. You mount it at the side of the machine, and just by changing some knob, you could play the two-minute rolls and the four-minute rolls.
So there wasn't a compatibility problem?
There wasn't a compatibility problem, but you had also changed the reproducer, because also the stylus in the reproducer had to be of a smaller radius.
So a bit like the old days of 78 records
and long playing. Yes, right. That's right. But it was very clever. So from 1908, you could play the new rolls also on the old machines. Well, we already talked about the indestructible rolls. And it was quite difficult for Edison to come also with longer-lasting rolls, because the Lambert company patented the celluloid and the cardboard. So Edison had to think of something else. And it took until 1912 that he introduced the blue amber roll. Was made of kind of plastic, colored blue, an inside of plaster.
So it wasn't indestructible, was it?
It wasn't indestructible. It lasted very long, and the roll we just played was a four-minute blue amber roll, and the sound is much softer but richer.
It is still true, though, that these were all mechanically recorded. We're still back to huge horns in rooms and orchestras playing as loud as they can.
Yes, because you had to make the original first, and the original had to be cut in wax.
Now let's go to a Scottish air from the last century, but recorded on a disc, not a roll, and invented by Emil Berliner. Unlike Edison, Berliner started out with the idea of using his record player for music. He developed a galvanic process whereby the discs could be copied, and he realized that some form of constant motor was needed.
It's a replica of the hand-driven record player, built in 1894, and you could buy it at that time for $15.
So was this a European invention?
No, in fact, Berliner is a German, but he moved to the States, and there he developed the record player. But he had a brother in Hanover, so the record player was introduced at about the same time also in Europe.
So you've got to turn the handle here, so here we go.
Yes, it doesn't have a spring motor, you just have to move it by hand, and that's why it sounds so lousy. And another problem is that the sound is very distorted because of the material. The material of the record is a kind of rubber, hard rubber, and the structure of the material is very rough, so you hear a lot of noise. That's why later he came to the material shellac, which is much more uniform.
Thank you. The thing's got better because the record player you've got next to it has a clockwork motor.
Yeah. Well, in fact, it's a standard talking machine gramophone. It has a very large spindle, as you see. It's about half an inch. This machine was made around 1901 till 1903. It had some strange marketing concept, because the records had a big center hole, and you could only play on this machine these specific records. And these records were cheaper than the normal records with a small hole. The Berliner records cost about $1, and this record cost about 60 cents.
So the manufacturer deliberately didn't want you to play Berliner's discs? Now, that's never worked as a marketing ploy, has it?
No, it didn't work, so they abandoned the idea already after 2 years.
So Berliner won that battle?
Berliner won that battle, yes. So the spindle he created, we still know on the normal record player.
What about speeds, though? I mean, you've been playing records there that look as though they're running faster than the old 78.
Yes. Well, in the beginning, the speed was not standardized, and it moved around 75 till 90 revolutions. Well, in the beginning, it was not so important, because the producers used clockwork motors, and these motors were driven by big weights hanging on a rope, so the gravity was, of course, we know the gravity is constant, so they had a constant speed, but the standardization of the speed itself was not done yet. And it also depended on the length of the recording. So first they calculated the length of the recording, and then they speeded up or speeded down the whole thing a little bit, so it could be put on one record.
And when did that standardization take place then? Has the recording techniques changed? I mean, people went to electric recording?
Yes, well, the electric recording forced a standardization, because in the States you had 60 hertz alternating current, and in Europe 50 hertz. And at that time they used two-pole synchronous motors. And in the States they ran with 3600 revolutions, and in Europe with 3,000 revolutions. But they had to standardize the speed on both continents.
Oh, so they standardized it by changing the gears?
In the States, they used a reduction of 46 to 1, and in Europe of 38.5 to 1. And then you get, with the respective speed of the motors, you get in the States 78.26 revolutions, and in Europe 77.92, and that's almost the same. You can't hear the difference. So that's how they came to 78 revolutions.
It's quite a complicated story, isn't it?
Very complicated, yes.
Actually, why don't you play the record player behind that one? I mean, it's got a much bigger horn on the top of it,
yeah.
And I'm sure it produces much more sound, doesn't it?
Yes, correct. It's also a later machine. It's from 1914. It's a Hismaster's voice machine, and it the sound is really something.
Where was it made?
In England.
Right, play it. The machine's from 1914, but is that recording from 1914?
No, I think the recording is made about 1922.
But there's not electric recording?
I'm not sure. They started with electric recordings around 1923, 1924.
Okay, now you've got another gramophone next door to it, but
yes.
it's In a cabinet?
It's in a cabinet, and it's a very early one. In fact, it's from 1912.
So it's even earlier than what we've just heard.
It's earlier than this one, and it sounds much better.
What are you doing? You're putting in a...
I'm putting in a new needle.
Was it made of steel?
It's made of steel, yes. And that's in fact, the only disadvantage of the Berliner record, because Edison already used diamonds and sapphires. So, we wind it up first.
Sounds superb. It's also very full and rich.
Yeah, it's one of the first record players with a built-in horn. And it's called the Library Bijou Grand. It's a very strange name for a record player. It's a His Master's Voice product. And it's introduced in 1911. This one is from 1912. And here I have a catalog of His Master's Voice. It's the catalog of December 1912. And the price of this machine at that time in oak was 260 Dutch guilders.
Good gracious. That is cheap by today's standards.
Yeah, but in those times it was a lot of money.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
So you mentioned guilders there. They were on sale here in Holland too.
Yes, this one was sold in Holland. Here you see it's a Dutch catalogue.
Difficult to find now, no doubt.
Yeah, very difficult. I'm very proud of it that I... have this one in my collection.
How long do those needles last?
You can play one record, so you can play two sides, but it's better to change it after one side of the record.
Really?
Yes.
And you can't sharpen them and reuse them?
No. You have to just to put in a new one, but you can still buy it.
You can still buy needles?
Yes, you can still buy steel needles.
Really?
It's made in India. They still play 78s in India and China. So it's produced there also nowadays.
Now, how did Edison react to all this? Because obviously this is sounding much, much better than his phonograph.
Yeah, well, Edison was not happy with this, of course. And he saw that the record was winning. It was not so strange because you can store records much more easier than rolls. Rolls take much more space. So Edison had to change the concept also into records. But he was very stubborn and he didn't want to leave the Hill and Dale principle. So he developed a record which sounded very, very good, but not so loud as the lateral record.
So you can only play these on an Edison player?
Yes, so he constructed a new record player with very advanced techniques. I will show you that right away. So that's why he didn't make it in the end. And he introduced his so-called diamond disc concept in 1915. And in 1929 he had to stop production because he couldn't sell it anymore. Here you see one of the Edison records.
Hang on, it looks like an ordinary 78 from the top, but hang on, just put it, yeah, on its side. Look, it's about, what, three times as thick as an ordinary record?
Yeah, right, right.
It's so heavy?
It's quite heavy. It's very solid.
Right.
So it's not indestructible, but if you drop it, it will not break as easily as a shellac record. The sales of Edison machines in Holland was quite big.
A bit like hi-fi today, because Holland's a major market for that too.
Well, in fact, the concept was quite different. The records were turning at a faster speed. It was about 90 revolutions. It was not played with a needle, but with a diamond. And that's why it's called a diamond disc.
But it wouldn't fill a concert hall. I mean, or at least it wouldn't fill a pub or cafe. And that was the advantage of the other systems. I mean, they make noise.
That's right. The sound is softer, but it's amazing how natural the sound is. And I will let you hear an example. This model was sold in the States for about $50. And a curious thing is that all these recordings are made acoustically, so no electric devices. He invented the electric light, but he didn't like electric sound.
The voice of Fred Hanabek. Next time, we look at how Edison's invention led to the development of the jukebox.
Marks on Mechanics was produced and presented by Jonathan Marks for Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.